vriendjes, welkom in de Koolier Show. In de afleveringen van vandaag spreek ik met mijn maat Gabriel Rios. We spreken over werk en leven, over schilderen, over eten, over fitness en over van alles. Het is een slecht Engels van mij, sorry.
Dag Gabriel. How are you?
I'm good.
What have you been doing today?
Kind of the same thing I do every day, actually. I started off kind of... It was a rocky start. I was trying to figure out what to do. And I usually start with a little bit of music in the mornings, the guitar, mm-hmm. trying to find stuff. Honestly, I'd be content with finding anything at this point. Uh-huh. But in terms of the songs and of playing and finding stuff, I'm kind of turning around in circles.
Why is that, you think?
Maybe you can tell me.
No, I couldn't.
I think I know a little bit, maybe a reason why it could be. I'm really trying to make something... I'm actually trying to find anything that I like. But mm-hmm. I usually start with things that I already have. Mm-hmm. Because starting with a complete blank slate is very is scary in a way, or maybe, I don't know, at a deep level, I don't really like it when I don't have anything. Mm-hmm. Although really nice stuff comes out then, but recently it hasn't been coming out, mm-hmm. new things. So I go to things I already have, mm-hmm. and then I turn around in circles because I don't really like them.
And do you have a plan then when you think about writing songs or do you think about an album then or a concept for that album?
No, I think about those things when I'm not writing songs. Mm-hmm. But at the moment itself, no. I usually just start. It's really similar to when I was a kid. I guess, you know, when you play with stuff and you just start pretending that you have something, like you sing, you mumble some shit and you look for sounds or exciting things, and it usually starts like that. It's like, you know, striking the match, and it usually comes from that. Mm-hmm. But recently that kind of playing is not really working. So what I do then, if I see that nothing's coming up, then I go to something I already have and I try it fast, slow, upside down, to see if I can pump some electricity into the dead body of whatever it is I'm trying to do. And sometimes I get really excited because something starts to work. Mm-hmm. But then a while later or the next day, it's sort of like it stops working. So I can be really excited about something and then really depressed about it in the next couple of minutes. So it's kind of, these days it's kind of extreme. I don't know if it's something that you recognize, but it's, in terms of songwriting, it's from one side of the spectrum to the other really fast.
Mm-hmm. No, I do recognize it, but for me, I really don't try every day because I kind of know already when it's going to work, I think.
Yeah.
It's more I write in some periods. And then I don't write for a very long time.
For a very long time?
Yeah.
Can you leave it alone for months or?
Yes, but it's not that there is something that I have to finish then. There's just nothing. It's not that I start with something and then I leave it laying around or something. No. It's just there's really nothing then. And most of the time I don't panic about that.
Yeah.
But sometimes I do, or I get really bored of being so lazy, maybe. I get a bit angry.
Yeah, you accumulate.
And then out of frustration something happens.
Yeah. Well, I'm certainly frustrated, so maybe that should be I've actually been doing this for a whole year now, and on and off. And there's been a bit of pressure, not from anybody outside, but from myself to really work on songs and to get a record going, because I don't want to wait too long. I think I told you the other day that I really, really love performing.
Yeah.
So I just want to get some material so that I can keep doing that stuff, because I really want to get back out on the road and be on stage and give those songs. So there is that pressure, like, will I ever find new songs? I mean, the older I get, the harder it gets a little bit. To stick to things that I really like. I think when we were younger, I didn't really question it much. I just, whatever came out, I used in some way.
Yeah.
But now I'm not easily pleased. So, but then I think these days it's all about trying to get some songs early in the day. Later on, I start thinking about food. It's about food hunting. And in the afternoons, I start painting.
Really?
Which is cool, because there's a bit more freedom there.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have to use words. I think the thing with songs right now is that you're tied to lyrics, you know. I'm not really a jazz musician or a composer in that way, that I can just be free with the notes. There's meaning. I'm always looking for words and for something to sing.
Mm-hmm.
And with colors and shapes and creating images, it seems to be more free. So in the afternoon, I spend some time here in this room.
What do you do with those paintings when they're finished?
None of them is finished, but I'm trying to hang them and wait to see if I can tolerate them. And hopefully with that, I'll accumulate some. I have no idea what I'm going to do.
Uh-huh.
I'm really happy when something comes together. It's a bit like that happiness we get with songs when they're done and you feel like you can actually play them.
And do you see them as parts of a series or something?
I hope so. I hope I can make a couple and but then exposing them makes me really, like, it's really it's a territory. It's unknown to me, because I graduated in 2001 and I never returned to hanging anything on the wall. So I don't know, but I think somewhere in you, for sure, there is this thing that you want to show them off.
Yeah.
But then you want to make sure that they're good, and by that I mean that you can tolerate them. You know, that you don't get tired of them. I don't think I could ever show them if I was already tired of them.
So I don't know how that works. I mean, I never made a painting, so. I mean,
it's pretty much the same as the whatever thing of just starting something.
Mm-hmm.
That's what you were going to ask, though. How does it work?
No, not the painting itself, but if you get tired of a painting, or if when you do or when you don't.
You just know the image is not moving you, or you have the feeling that you killed it by putting too much on it,
mm-hmm.
or by taking too much away. And maybe it gets tiring when you controlled it too much.
Mm-hmm.
And you see your hand everywhere. It's like you ever have one of those songs where you got everything you wanted, but then it says nothing to you because you had a lot of control.
Yeah.
Maybe it's similar to overproducing something, or it's great in every aspect, but it says nothing to you because you kind of left no air in it or something.
Yeah. Although with a painting, I think it's more ambachtelijk.
Yeah.
I mean, if you start to paint, you have too much paint. It's harder to erase it, no? Than with a computer and vocals you recorded.
Good point. That's why I'm actually working on materials that I can erase very easily.
Really?
Yeah.
What are those?
Well, I found some... how did I get to this stuff? What was I doing? There was... I found these wax crayons that are soluble in water.
Yeah.
And when I can really take stuff off, which means that I can create the illusion of white paint by just taking off. it's a bit like like playing with paint when you're little again. It's like, it's very, you can go pretty wild and always know that you can eliminate it again. Yeah. So in a way it's cheating a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
I can hear the teachers in my head telling me that I'm cheating and that it's too easy. On the other hand, I really do believe that nothing is easy, because the materials you work might free you, but they also give you other problems.
Uh-huh.
So I make myself feeling better thinking that there's still problems enough to solve, even though I make it easy for myself in that way of being able to eliminate. You still run on, you like, painting is constant problems, basically. Mm-hmm. A lot, you're messing with a lot of rules that either you follow or you break.
Mm-hmm.
If it's too free and you don't have what it takes to deal with all that freedom, you get stuck. Kind of like with the songs. So in a way, in that way, it's similar. So in a way, you always need something to sail towards. Even if it's abstract, your eye is liking it and there is an image that you're liking. You need if it's too open, it can be a problem.
It's funny that you say you hear the teacher. I mean,
they're still there, man. It was which is great. I had teachers that were really challenging and very difficult, especially the first 2 years. And I remember one in particular that was very difficult and really just breaking down what I was doing a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But it never felt mean to me or something. I kind of, you know, apart from the drama that you enter into, like, that I'm an artist and he's trying to kill my shit, and at the end you really learn so much and you're happy that somebody is giving you a fight about something, because mm-hmm. again, too much freedom is worse than there's no. So, you know, somebody telling you that you're hiding there, or you're doing something easy and you could be going for a much more interesting image,
mm-hmm.
is something that I think we look for. It's like when your friends, or I don't know, and you show a song and they're kind of, we talked about this a long time ago, when you show a song to a person and you're in the room, you hear the song through their ears, and you almost know immediately what's wrong with it or what you're not doing.
Mm-hmm.
It's very similar.
Okay.
And it can be a really anxious feeling, but at the end of the day, I think we really like it, because then we know where we are or something.
Is that what a producer does for you?
Yeah. My friend Ruben, who produced the record, is very good at that. He never told me anything I wanted to hear necessarily, unless he felt it himself. He also played on the record and he's part of the trio, so it made it even, you know, if he didn't want to play it, then he wouldn't want to produce it either. So I had to impress him. I had to impress Amber, who was on cello,
uh-huh.
enough for them to want to play this stuff. And I think that's really a blessing, honestly, because imagine you're stuck with, I think that would be my worst nightmare, is stuck with people that you unconsciously later, you feel that they're just doing what you want to do, but they don't really feel it.
Yeah.
I think even if you don't talk about it, uh-huh. you will feel that. And mm-hmm. little by little, it'll make you, it would make me very uneasy to know that they don't really share, you know, they don't have to love the song like they wrote it, but there has to be something pulling people, even the producer. Yeah. So I honestly cannot imagine these producers who take on jobs for money
mm-hmm.
and enjoy just the craft aspect of capturing something, making it sound amazing and edgy without really feeling something for the song. I could never do that.
Do you like to be in the studio?
Yeah, but I've had really bad experiences in studios. So I want to be in a studio when all the songs are done, and I've mm-hmm. tried them out a lot.
Yeah.
And I because I don't know how you experience it, but even when all my songs are finished and I've tried them out a lot, like last time, we tried them out for almost 3 years or mm-hmm. 2 years and a half or so. Even then, you're going to enter another space, like a vortex where shit doesn't make sense at all and you doubt all of them again.
Mm-hmm.
So it helps to know that, wait a minute, I tried them and I know that they were there. Even though now they disappeared, I know that they were there a second ago. So in the past, I waited, and while I was recording, I was still making lyrics and changing arrangements, and I honestly don't want to be in that position right now. Maybe in the future I'll have, I could see myself being old and saying I'm going to go into the studio with nothing, but I doubt it, honestly. I really do, that that's ever going to happen again.
But do you try to reproduce what you gerepeteerd hebt? Als je zo lang die nummers probeert, probeer dan in de studio echt dat te doen?
It's funny. I think yes and no. I think in a way, you know what you got at a certain gig when you were trying out something. You know, wow, this we have to capture. But deep in inside of yourself, you know that you're never going to catch that exact feeling again. But you aim for it like a fucking fool, and that creates a performance again that is a cousin but not the same one, even though it looks like it a lot. But I do believe you can get pretty close to those feelings. If you remember that the original feeling was also an illusion, because that maybe it wasn't even a good performance, but we have in our mind like what a song could be. If somebody would have recorded that live, you would have seen that it was that you sang, that you forgot words and sang false and didn't get there, but in your mind you saw what it could be. And I think that that's what matters, that's what drives you. And but I've been in the studio before where I had to throw away everything, and it's very painful because you are invested in it in almost like a physical way. And I don't really want to have those experiences anymore. That's why I don't do anything anymore with programming or having too much control, like sitting in front of, I made my first two records in front of a computer. And I really enjoyed it at the time, but little by little I got a very I really got a bad reaction towards sitting in front of a computer and programming and fixing things. It made me really it put me in a dark place, honestly, combined with other things. But so now I try to learn the song so that if I perform it, you come back to the control room, you listen, and if it's not there, it's obvious that it's not there. You have to do it again. But the starting to tweak things, and it's you know, I still do it a little bit, but
I really hate that. But you always have a little bit of this or that you want to change, and
there's always that. But I try to minimize it, because in the past it was actually all I did.
Do you still make demos?
I record things on my phone, in the dictaphone on my phone, and then I play it back to myself immediately after to see if there's something there. That's as far as it goes. I've been to Ruben's house twice this past year in Amsterdam, and I had about 5 or 6 ideas, and we put them down, and I was really happy about it at the time, and then it all completely disappeared, and there's only one left. So demoing makes me nervous too, because unless I'm in a good place and the song is done, but apparently they were not there yet, and then I just have demos of things I don't like. So I actually struggle a lot with this stuff. It's not as open as I would like it to be, honestly. I know rationally or in my mind that it shouldn't be this difficult, and that maybe if it is, you should put it aside. But it doesn't stop me from struggling with it and entering that spiral.
Have you ever had a song that was really difficult to make or to record, and then all of a sudden it did work?
I'm trying to think, because the last record we did in Woodstock, we were there for 6 days. We did half a record there, and the second half we did it in Belgium and Holland, in the Galaxy and somewhere in Holland in an old radio studio. So they were short recording periods, which was great, because we already knew the songs. But yeah, like that you start making takes and you think it's not coming together.
Yeah, because it really, like some songs you write and you think, yeah, it's good, it's okay. You go into the studio, you record them, and it's not there. And then you work and you work and you work, and maybe I have some songs that ended up being on a record, but when I hear them back, I hear that struggle, I hear the work, and I'm not really happy. I don't think I ever made a song, I recorded a song that was really a lot of work. Wacht, ik zei het misschien verkeerd, maar ik denk dat ik nog nooit veel gefixt aan een song of hem proberen beter te maken, en dat het dan eigenlijk effectief ook echt beter was.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I do know what you mean. I actually have it with everything. But that's a part of yourself that I kind of tolerate because I know it's always speaking, you know, like showing you the diagram of the song and where it's lacking and where it's not working. And I actually have that all the time.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like something you learn to live with. The only moment when you maybe don't have it is when you catch yourself listening to your music because it's on somewhere,
mm-hmm.
and maybe for 3 seconds you hear it almost as though you didn't make it and there's a distance. Years do that too. If you listen to all records, you almost can catch them like without knowing what they are, like they almost like you don't remember that it's your song.
Yeah.
For a very short period of time, you can almost see that it's actually pretty good. You don't see the details, you don't see the layers, but it almost never happens.
And then it gets embarrassing when you're at a place and you hear a song of your own. Maybe people start noticing or not.
I have the feeling that they will, and they don't. And but then all of a sudden somebody will say something. And somebody does, and that puts your whole theory, throws it out the window, and you realize some people do hear it, which makes it even worse. But most of the time, I don't think people hear this. We see everything separate, and people don't, luckily, they don't perceive it that way.
Yeah, you're probably right.
That's what I fucking tell myself.
It's more embarrassing when it's the other way around. When you drive around your car with new recordings or demos you want to listen to know if they're good or if you want to change something, and then you stop at the stoplights playing your own song and somebody stops next to you, you're like,
and the window's down.
Yeah. Have you had that?
No, but I probably had it, and I don't know that I did, which is, something must have happened like that.
Or, I was in Kortrijk this weekend, Singsefeesten. I was walking around, and all of a sudden I heard Tof van Commerce. And I tried to ignore it, but I was talking to people, and then I noticed I was dancing a little bit.
you were moving to your own,
yeah.
To your jam. You're rocking out to your own jam.
Yeah, and then I noticed, and I stopped. Like,
which made it all the more noticeable to whoever you were talking to. Probably like, what happened? I was in Thailand once in a market, and I heard a Latin bass line. It was, I don't know if I told you this, it's a long time ago. It was with my first record. I was walking in this market, and you know how sometimes you can hear bass because of the frequencies?
Mm-hmm.
You hear a groove, but you don't hear any of the other frequencies. So it's like a really low rumble, but you can tell that it's a cool flow.
Yeah.
Like you're like, oh, this is great. And it was a kind of Latin feel that I really liked. I was like, I would like to do something like that because it had a little bit of electronics and the bass line, and it seemed like it was totally not organic, but it still grooved. And I swear, I got, this is a huge market in Thailand with people talking and food and you know, and I got closer to find it, and it was my song being played on a Putumayo compilation, which used to be, I don't know if you know, these old world music compilations in the 90s that they had everywhere in bookstores, and Bones Boogaloo, the song, was on it, and it was playing, and I realized it sounded nicer from farther away, but I realized that it was actually my song. I was very, very proud. Lasted for a couple of minutes.
That's great.
Didn't tell anybody.
No. Were you alone there?
I was with my girlfriend at the time. I told her.
I heard I was in South Africa in Kaapstad a couple of months ago. And I didn't hear myself, but I heard a really cheesy remix of a song from Tourist. You know Tourist, right?
Yeah.
And
like a house thing?
Yeah. It was actually my girlfriend who noticed it, and she told me, listen. And it was like, what? We were on a rooftop, on a pool bar. Like really, and it was like this house music, and I said, yeah, it's Tourist. So I recorded it, and I sent Johannes an email like, listen, I heard your song in Kaapstad, and he didn't seem very surprised actually, but what he did say was, I don't know this version.
So there are many. There are many.
Yeah, that's weird.
Actually, I had a direct experience with that, because with Gold, there was a remix, and in the beginning, it came up, because when you're on Twitter and you see it come up and you don't think anything of it. And honestly, I didn't think anything of it. I thought it was kind of like a regular sort of, because people did a couple of remixes of Gold, and it seemed like something people do at home and put it on. And that one actually took on a lot of momentum. And it opened so many doors for us, and I really dismissed it in the beginning. The guy even wrote me, and I completely ignored it, because I was like, I don't want to connect with that, because I don't know if somebody's going to start asking for questions or for me to share it on my sites, or, and I didn't want to. And actually, it I didn't have to do anything. It just took on a life of its own, and it was a rip from a live version of Gold.
Yeah.
So it's not even from the album.
Uh-huh.
And it's amazing how things like that can just, it's the best promotion I've ever had without even trying. And the guy was just doing what he does. So these days it's like, literally once it's out, it could become anything.
How does that work though? Do they have to ask you, or?
Actually, it doesn't, they don't have to ask you in the beginning. But if it gets big, it's probably in their favor and in your favor, both parties, that they do ask you, because then it becomes kind of like a cover, and you can actually underhandle how you're going to look at the situation. You can pay somebody a flat fee for having done the arrangement of that remix. But the rights, if you claim it, then the rights, it's just like your song. So the rights still go to you. And then they're happy with the exposure, hopefully, and with the flat fee. That's a way to deal with the situation. The cool thing is that you just wait to see if it does something. If it doesn't do anything, then you don't have to claim it either, because there's nothing. So it went really, there was no real problem. I think it's the only problem is when somebody does it and they claim it for themselves, or like they wrote it, or they change it and they use something valuable. But this went really smooth, and it was a cool story, because people found the other songs through that remix, and I was really grateful for that, because you know, labels can do so much. They try, but can't force people to find your music.
And that was worldwide, or was it more Scandinavia?
It was more Scandinavia, but it did have plays in other countries in Europe, because I remember people, when I asked them why they were at the gigs in Germany, or we once played in London, but people had different answers. These were very small audiences, so you could actually talk to people afterwards and ask them why they were there. And some said because of the remix, and then I, in Spotify, it's really easy. Then you just end up in somebody's page like really quickly if you look for the original. Some people have found it because of the videos on YouTube, because that's also something I didn't really do on purpose, but I did 12 videos just playing the songs live.
Yeah.
When you would go to my name on YouTube, it really was like 12 black and white videos, which made it, it makes it very visible. And then people start checking them. And it actually helped. And through the YouTube videos, people found the Spotify. And then, so I don't know. I have the feeling that at least in my case, it's good that it's so open, because depends what you want. For me, I just want to play live and I want to work.
Mm-hmm.
So the easier it is for people to find your stuff, the more they'll come to the gigs and tell other people to come. And basically, that's all I want for now. I don't think we're playing those big games, you know?
Yeah.
So you don't need, like, at this stage, I just need whatever is there to keep me working. And I'm happy with that, as long as I'm, as there's no, like, nobody stealing your stuff. But that's not the case, so.
Uh-huh. Do you ever think about, I know we talked about this, but do you ever think about making more traditional Puerto Rican music again?
Yeah.
I mean, again, well.
That's what I was doing this morning. That's what I was trying to do. I think about it a lot, because something happens when, at the end of the shows nowadays, I play two very old classics, and I notice that when I'm doing that, I behave different and I sing different. And there's a rhythm when I play that I don't have to do anything for. And I really mean that in the most, you know, like, humble way. Like, I don't really have to work at it at all to do a very specific thing. And with my songs in English, I feel like, maybe by now, because I've played them for a long time, it's getting better. But I always feel that a lot of effort goes into playing them.
Mm-hmm.
Like, because they are, I didn't make it easy for myself.
Yeah.
And I really have to try to play them right, or to play them at least. Mm-hmm. But with music from Puerto Rico, it feels like you're just, I don't know, it feels more like it's more natural.
Yeah.
Even though I'm not really a Puerto Rican, you know, I'm not a Latin music connoisseur, or there's a lot that I can't do. I do very simple things, but somehow, maybe because just by being born there and that you live there so long, things come out easier. And sometimes I lack that of my other music.
Uh-huh.
So yeah, I really think about it a lot. But you remember in the old days, like, my music was really sort of festival oriented and mm-hmm. very danceable. And that's not really the Latin music that I want to make now, because I'm older and I don't feel anything for that kind of stuff. So it's very difficult for me to find repertoire, be it like covers or mm-hmm. to write new songs that can stand next to some of these classics. These are like not verse chorus songs. They're like old standards.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How does that work?
Structures.
Weird structures.
They have other structures.
Other.
Like older, more archaic structures that are not, and it's not all the time, but it is like that. If you look at, of course, there's everything. I mean, if you listen to Suavemente, if, like the merengue thing, it is, you know, a pretty straightforward pop structure. But anything from the big songs that are, even the Buenavista, Chan Chan and stuff like that, it's not a, it's got one of those things where it's just the verse.
Yeah.
It's a repetitive verse over and over again. And the riff is so attractive that it's a song.
Mm-hmm.
And those, I don't know if you have ever tried to write one of those where you don't need a chorus, but it's tough. It's like, you know, a song without a chorus that the last sentence of the verse is actually the chorus. Like,
yeah,
you just, you end up saying something and it's like, ta-da.
Yeah,
it's like, I love that kind of song. I just, mm-hmm. it's really hard to make.
Yeah.
And also these songs come from, I don't know, from old popular music and I guess jazz standards are similar sometimes too.
Mm-hmm.
And there is a knowledge of music that I don't have. I just instinctively gravitate towards it, but I didn't study it. I don't know theory, and I think that has an influence in it as well.
Is it really that complicated, or is it something else?
It's not complicated at all, but that's the problem. It's really simple. One of the songs that I play at the end of the show is a very simple song,
mm-hmm.
but I could have never come up with it.
And isn't it more the fact that you don't allow yourself to do that? Because of your pop background also?
Yeah. Yeah. How to unlearn what you're doing, right? Yeah. Like, actually, it certainly is that. And I think you, I don't want to be too philosophical, but you just hit the nail on the head in terms of everything that is happening to me right now. I think it's, if you're too aware of something,
mm-hmm.
There's too much information that you're putting on it because you're very sensitive to too much details or about how things work, and you, that's not where you want to be. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's where you want to be when you relate to people either. Like, you want to be in the place where you're not, where you are automatic and you're not thinking about what you're doing. I think that's what we're, and honestly, I struggle with that a lot these days.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully because it's going to change, because it would be weird that it just stays like this. But I don't know, where does that come from? Your brain, your upbringing. There's so many things that I'm actually doing it again. I'm trying to explain it, but I feel that to be an issue. Yeah. Then the question is, could you get out of that? Could you practice being in another way, like not being so focused on because it comes really, really natural, of course. Mm-hmm.
I think if you limit your possibilities or you limit your time that you allow yourself to work on one song, or I don't know.
Yeah.
Have you ever had a music teacher actually?
No. Well, I did. In school, I started playing. I was in Catholic school, and if you wanted to, you could join the choir, and then they teach you guitar just so you could accompany the choir.
Mm-hmm.
Which was really great because then you immediately got chords and you mm-hmm. got these diagrams that showed you the chords. And that was good enough to learn the basic chords and to be able to have rhythm and follow the choir in church and even to perform live, because you, on Fridays, you had to, first Friday of the month, you had to perform in church for the whole school. And that started something, but I never really thought much of it for a while because I was 8 years old when I started with that first guitar. And I already was aware of the Beatles. I was aware of the Police and Paul Simon and jazz. And my dad made me these mixtapes, and relatively young. I think I was even younger than 8 when I had a Walkman. He would give me a lot of music.
Mm-hmm.
So I knew that people made songs, and I immediately wanted to make songs as soon as I got the guitar, but I didn't have the chords, I didn't have the tools. It took a really long time up until the teenage years when I really, really picked it up again. But in terms of music teachers, yeah, I joined the choir in high school, and there you needed to follow music theory up until a certain point. But I really found it really frustrating. I really didn't like it. I didn't show up, and I didn't really do the assignments. And
do you think you use the things you learned then?
No, because I really didn't learn anything from that.
Mm-hmm.
I really, really, really didn't do the work. So I can't say it's not having followed it that made me what I am now.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not defending that at all, because I don't think it's necessarily such a blessing. I mean, it is, because you don't know what you're doing. You come up with things that other people don't come up with. That's clear. But on the other hand, you do have handicaps, of course. I don't wish that I had. I really don't regret it. Because my personality, I know now I probably wouldn't have, if I had a chance to do it again, I probably wouldn't have paid attention again, because I get nervous with all that theory. If it's about something that I really want to do, it makes me a bit anxious.
Yeah.
Very anxious, actually. So I kind of like not knowing and finding shit without knowing what I'm doing. The problem is that right now I'm kind of paying the price for that, because there's, you're not part of any genre, you're not part of any school or any tradition. If I would have stayed in Puerto Rico, maybe making music there, because I'm there and I speak Spanish, would have also limited it more and put me in a certain direction. But let's just say, like, I always get really what I want, and now I'm very free. But that can be kind of limiting.
Yeah.
But there's no regrets. You have to do it with what you have. And this is, you know, like, this is what it is. Like,
uh-huh.
I don't know if you feel, for example, that you're part of some kind of, that you're connected to some kind of musical tradition. Like, I certainly don't. Like, maybe when I play stuff in Spanish, I have the illusion that I belong to,
yeah,
Puerto Rican music, and that makes me feel good.
Yeah, but don't you think you do?
I do to a certain extent. Yeah, when I make that music, I do. That's why I really want to go back to what you were asking. That's why I want to return.
Uh-huh.
Actually, I went to Puerto Rico some months ago, and I had the feeling as well, just being there, like, It's great to see that you have things inside of you that are just the way they are because you're from a place, you know,
yeah,
that you're not floating in space like some satellite, that you actually belong somewhere. And even if you don't have to live there, but I don't know, that you have a certain things in your personality are affected by it. It's maybe growing older. It's good to know that you're not that free.
Mm-hmm.
It feels good. So yeah, hopefully the songs, hopefully I find them. I don't know. I don't want to make a whole covers album, so I'm going to have to write a couple of them.
Were you ever thinking about doing that?
Yeah.
Really? Now?
Yeah, just finding a bunch of them, of old classics that I like, and recording those.
Uh-huh.
I think you could have a couple, but I don't think I want to make a whole record like that, because it would be,
yeah,
sort of like some kind of, I don't know, a bit like a folkloric thing. I don't.
Yeah, yeah.
And honestly, man, I went back and I played in Puerto Rico, like,
mm-hmm,
this Marauder, like from this record, and I played a couple of these Spanish songs, and people were really not impressed at all. Back home, they were more interested in what I was doing in English, because I think in general, because I can't speak for everybody, but I had the feeling that it was something different for them.
Mm-hmm.
But hearing some of the songs that you grew up with played by somebody, it's not necessary. It's like, how can you compare it? It's like, maybe it's like, I mean, it's like if somebody now would cover you, you know, to people who grew up with your music, it'd be nice, but it's probably not very exceptional because they know your songs.
Mm-hmm.
So it would be a nice gesture,
yeah,
and be cute. Mm-hmm. And they were like, oh, look, he's playing songs we all know. But it certainly wasn't like, wow, he's doing those in his own original way. It wasn't, that wasn't,
no,
what I
no,
actually had comments more like, oh, he doesn't really pronounce the words completely, which you probably get a lot too. Well, I had it in Puerto Rico, like the comments were more about my pronunciation, which I thought was hilarious. Like, so I didn't impress anybody with this shit.
Did they like your other stuff?
Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah, they did. I was very nervous about playing in English because when I left Puerto Rico, the internet was, this sounds really weird, but when I left Puerto Rico, the internet was not really there.
Uh-huh.
So,
yeah, that's 20 years ago, no?
Yeah. Fuck. So I actually bought cassettes and CDs.
Uh-huh.
To find Fugazi, I had to hear about it in the punk scene and then go find the records. And the records were, you know, at the record store, obviously, like,
mm-hmm,
everywhere. But in Puerto Rico, the access to other kinds of music, that's why I went into that more alternative, to the punk scene, because you could find other kinds of music. But now everything's out in the open. So maybe what I mean is that when I left music in English, if you were Puerto Rican and you sang in English, it was seen, I had the feeling as though it was kind of like a betrayal.
Really?
Yeah, because there is a resistance to, we are US, but there is a Puerto Ricans are very proud, and there is a resistance to everything. If you make art, it should be Puerto Rican. And you feel that. Even when I went now, you feel it. I'm generalizing because not everybody's like that, but the feeling is still there.
Mm-hmm.
Somehow, I have the feeling that when I went back now, since everything's been cracked and everything's going in already for years through the internet, then that's much more open, and people are much more open to somebody being from there and singing in English and having lived abroad, and they found it very interesting. Look at this guy. He left. He made this shit. He came back, and now this is what he made somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind. They're curious. So yeah. It felt really good. That felt really nice.
Would it bother you if you made an album like that and they really like it here, but they don't do there?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it would make me feel. It would bother me, but I actually think it's impossible, because. Not because my songs are amazing, but because music, everybody finds music, and I have this feeling that that everywhere you go in the world, people connect to music or they don't. Mm-hmm. And there will be people who do and there will be people who don't. I played in this place in Scotland, and I will always remember this. This is like 2 years ago. I played in this really little cafe in Scotland. When you go to the UK in the beginning, it's rough. Like you have to play places where there's nobody in the middle of nowhere. This was like some Game of Thrones shit, like in front of a lake with mountains and a brand cafe where in a village in front of the water, where there literally were probably 5-6 people, four of which were like old drinkers, you know, like old school people who've been there since noon. And a man and his wife, maybe in their 60s or 70s. And I played for these people and for some people in the back who were making noise, and there's a pinball machine, and it's like really, really random. And this older lady, I remember my songs are really, really empty. So like it or not, people start to become quiet because I didn't realize that I made this kind of thing where it's kind of a trick.
Mm-hmm.
If you take away shit, then there's a hole, and then people feel that there's some tension because there's no strumming, there's no drums, yeah. There's nothing. And I realized that because I was attracted to that, so I started doing that, and then I realized that if you do that, people shut up. But it doesn't mean that they necessarily like it, but they certainly are paying attention.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw this old lady, they were talking, these old people, and then they became quiet, and this old lady sort of like looked back. She had her back to me, and for the rest of the concert, she was kind of looking, like I could only see one eye, and she was really, really paying attention. I have no idea what she thought, but I was like, that's really what I want. I don't mean to make it sound poetic, because for me, it's that basic. Like, mm-hmm. If you can do that, then probably everywhere you go, you're going to have at least one person. And that tension is what you look for. I would feel really bad if I would have gone to Puerto Rico and I would have played and everybody would have kept on talking and not mm-hmm. have connected. That would have made me feel really like, you know, terrible. But does that ever really happen all the way like that anymore? No, I don't think we're in those situations, because you make songs that you like,
mm-hmm.
and there are other people like you, you know. So somehow it will connect to somebody. It won't, you know, like... I'm not in those situations anymore where it's like no connection. Like,
yeah.
So.
Yeah, sometimes I have it, but not a lot. But
in a corporate or.
Yeah, something like that.
Although there, it doesn't bother me, and that's a really interesting thing. When you start playing corporates, you're very bothered by this. I don't care anymore because. It's funny, but the context is different, and then it's okay. Then it's like a paid rehearsal for me. It's perfect. Then I can do whatever I want. But if they're supposed to be liking it and they don't, then it hurts my feelings.
Yeah.
if you play in a theater and it would happen, it would be the worst thing in the world. So yeah. If you play in the theater and they're with their phones and you see the blue light on their face, it makes me really like, why are you sitting there?
It's so funny that you see them, you spot them immediately because they put a light to their face, to their own face. And
yeah.
And they think it's a stickum or something.
It's they have their own spotlight.
When I was thinking about this conversation, I didn't prepare very much, and I was thinking, what can we talk about? And then all of a sudden, I remember the story you once told me, but I forgot the details. But it was a really funny story about a bass drum, you being on stage falling down. Would you like to share that?
That was your drummer, actually. Your drummer's bass drum. That was Carl's bass drum. It was in Antillianza Fiesen, and we had actually played, you know, quite of like an intense show because we had all this dance, this Latin explosive dance stuff, and at the end, you know, I had worked it up to a climax where the light man, he knew that that in the last song, you know, it would build up really loud, and Rodrigo was making a lot of feedback, and the rhythm was almost like a techno buildup, and right at the moment where you hit it and it stops, the lights would go out. So I kind of like, I didn't have to do it, but you know, when you start off, you really get into it, and I jumped in order to stop the song with a movement of the guitar. And I tripped and I fell forward, landing in front of the drums, and I landed on my hands, like both hands under my knees, like with my ass pointed towards the audience. And the light man kind of, he went to black a little too late. So the ending of the concert was anticlimactic, just my butt and a salute in the opposite direction. Yeah.
And was your head really in the bass drum?
It literally was. I remember the mic. So it wasn't in, but it was like, it was very close. Yeah.
And I remember you told me that you couldn't do much about it because you landed on your hands.
Yeah, you can't get up. And it also wasn't as dark as you would like it to be afterwards. So it's like I stayed there, and that was, you know, like, that's a funny thing. I don't know if you ever did this, because I always saw you as kind of like a natural, just you were on stage the way you were. Like, but I really tried to entertain people in the beginning. I'm not saying, I mean, you also, I've seen you entertaining.
Yeah.
But I really was very conscious of that. I had to do certain things if I was going to play that music. I had to. And I don't do that anymore already for years, but there's a lot of stories like that of having tried to do something, you know, like trying too hard, you know?
Yeah. But was that jumping in the air and like doing this, was that trying too hard? I don't know.
No, not that part, but everything together, like having that climax and going to black and I think having that build up in that music. I really respect people who, this is a métier, who create these things. I'm just really not interested in it.
Yeah,
I still have it. There's always some manipulation going on, but it's much more subtle because I don't want to be in the situations in the fails section anymore. And it's better if you just remove yourself from the equation.
But you're not necessarily a people pleaser when you play live, right?
No, not anymore. I tried. I thought it was a good experience to learn how to do that or not do that. But I have the feeling like, in a way, again, like I am a people pleaser because I have this sort of pretentious feeling that what I'm going to do is something that they're going to connect to. But that I have to like it. And because if I would like it, then they would like it.
Uh-huh.
And of course, that doesn't go for everybody, but I do believe that those things really connect us. So I'm pretty sure that if I follow that, I'm going to end up in good situations. But it's probably not going to be massive situations or a lot of people won't connect because it asks quite a lot from the audience in the beginning. But my experience is that once they get used to it, they connect. And I don't know, or I'm delusional and it's all an illusion. But I've played enough to see it work somehow, maybe. Yeah. It's also possible I just tell this to myself and I'm comfortable with that. I don't know. But I think I feel something.
Are you happy with the how would I say it, the level you're on now? I mean, the level of success and the kind of things you do and the kind of gigs you play?
Here in Belgium, certainly, because I have an audience and I'm established to a certain point where I can work if I want to. And I think, honestly, man, that's I think you're aware of that as well, that we can keep doing this stuff is pretty incredible already.
Yeah.
Although Belgium has always been a country where that's possible. But being in New York and being in other places, you realize that that's certainly not the case. It's certainly not the case in Puerto Rico at all. If I would move back there with all my nostalgia, I wouldn't be able to work because you play two gigs and everybody already saw you, you know, and everybody who's interested in that kind of music, I mean, I'm exaggerating a little bit, but there's not enough work and there's no structure to do what we do here. I was talking to people, and even the Sabam thing and even your rights, like it's in Puerto Rico, it's not really established yet, like not to the degree of like you can make a living out of your music.
Yeah.
But am I happy completely with my career as it is? No, because I want to, I guess I want, with a lot, what a lot of people want, I want to be able to play to more people and to travel more and to, I'm not happy just playing here. I'm not, because I've learned and seen things traveling that I could have never otherwise. So I it's kind of a feeling that I want to keep having. Maybe one day I'll get tired of that, but I think you can't get tired of it until you really have it.
Yeah.
Intensely. And I don't feel like I've had it enough. I in the last years we traveled quite a bit, but I think it could be a lot more. And I actually want that. I really do. So in that way, there's a lot of ambition still there with having.
But if you say you like to travel when you do, I mean, does it combine well with playing live? Do you see enough, I mean, of the...
Not at all. For me, traveling, actually, traveling when you're touring is not really traveling. That's actually really true. But traveling more in the sense of playing to different audiences, maybe, that are not the same. And then you find out that in some ways they're the same, but in some ways completely different. And I love that feeling of convincing people and who don't know anything about you. I really like being in that position. It's a sort of, it sounds masochistic sometimes because the whole New York thing was like that. And people were asking me, why are you know, like we played for such small, like 7 people, 10 people, 20 people for years, for a couple of years. So I never felt bad about, I always felt like I really, that it was very intense and really exciting for some reason. So I like it. I want to do it more. But yeah, it is, you don't get to see anything of a city and you're always tired and it's weird and you have to figure out what to do with yourself during the day when you have been sleeping on a bus and you don't know what to do with your mental situation. It's difficult. But playing makes it, I don't know, maybe you have the feeling like you're there for a purpose because you have to play a gig and it gives it a little bit of a heroic thing, you know, like that's what it is for me.
Yeah. Well, luckily you don't party, because if you would party, it would be even worse.
Yeah, I think actually it would be worse after a while. In the beginning, it probably would work to a certain extent because it takes care of some anxieties. But as we know, nothing really stops that from getting worse. I mean, it's just a matter of time before you become exhausted and shit just starts to break down. I think for everybody in some way, I've seen it. What I don't understand, which I think is incredible, is people like Iggy Pop and the fact that they're not dead, you know, and that they stay really optimistic and sort of joyous. I don't understand that. I find it to be, I'm in awe of somebody like that.
But how does he live? What kind of lifestyle does he have? Do you know that?
I have no idea, but judging by his radio show and also by he did a conference on YouTube on the music business, which which is amazing for the BBC. You should check it out. It's great. It's like a 2 hours. And I don't think, his lifestyle might be complex. I have the feeling he's one of these guys who kind of is pretty healthy these days. He must have a couple of habits that he sustains, either sports or maybe he smokes weed. I don't know. But in general, like, I think he keeps himself pretty pure, because when he's doing the conference, it looks like just a joyous old man. And I don't think you can hide the damage. I think there's enough examples of rock and roll old dudes that are fucked up, and you can tell that they're not there. But that they're incredibly neurotic. Like there's like Lou Reed or something. Like there's a buildup of neurosis from having gotten your way for 50 years. You know, like this really, really rigid, weird shit. But with him, I don't see that at all. It looks like the opposite. And I have no idea. I really would want to know if it's true, number one, and how he does it, because he has survived a couple of cataclysms, I think. No, I.
What's a cataclysm?
A fucking disaster, like more than once, I think. Like, so maybe some people can last a really long time, but. Maybe, I don't know. I don't know how you experience it. Whatever is cool and has a rock and roll notion of cool, I find suspect. Because it's for me, it doesn't say anything. It did when I was young. And I think we all had sort of these, you know, fantasies and these illusions of living a kind of life. But when I see, maybe it's the age, but when I see people doing it, like we've been here long enough and young people doing it over, and I find it the most conservative, uninteresting shit, you know, because all the elements, you already know them, and there's nothing, I don't know. It looks fake to me most of the time, I have to say. Nobody makes that shit look real enough. So I see it and it look kind of an interesting, of course, there's always exceptions. There's fucked up people who are very interesting. But generally, we know what's behind the curtain already, so.
Did you expect it to be like this when you were a little older? I mean, look at us. I'm 41, you're 39 or something?
38.
We work out, we don't drink. I go to bed on time.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't want it any other way. Actually, I really love this.
Me either. No, you're totally right. I didn't expect it. I remember being in my mid-20s and thinking, at least I can have sort of a random sort of wild lifestyle until I'm 40. I really remember thinking, actually being kind of happy that thinking I can probably do this till I'm 40 and feeling like what fucking adventures am I going to have until I'm 40 in this world, in this kind of night world or a world where you don't have to wake up or you don't have to do anything really structured. I really took a lot of energy from that. And that's real, man. I think that's real joy. I don't feel bad about that, having had that. But it's just complete bullshit, because your body breaks down and your mental components just stop working. I wonder if we would have stopped if we wouldn't have hit a wall. I think I certainly didn't stop because it's the right thing to do. It's just that the tools, the machine stopped working. Like, and then it's really scary. Then it's really, it's black. It's terrible. So I think a lot of people don't know that state. So they talk about things in more of a fantasy way. of what they would like to have. But man, you have a body, you have a mind, you have emotions, and all this shit takes revenge on you if you don't pay attention to it. That's just like they get jealous of, like they need attention, and and they'll fuck your world up. I think you know that, and as much as I do. And I find it fascinating because it's probably the single most important event in my life is a breakdown. Because it showed me really terrible fucking shit that I've never experienced in any other way. But it also opened up the life that you're talking about, like another life that is really far deeper.
Yeah.
But it looks so fucking boring, so you cannot really share it with people because you might be living an incredibly deep, rich life, but on the surface, nobody knows it. I think when you're young, you want people to know what your shit is all about. But now it's like, there's more depth, of course, but yeah, it's only inside.
People are going to know, man. They're watching 400 or maybe 500 people to this show. Sometimes 1,000, or even if you're Brihang, 4,000. So you never know.
Shit.
I have, to finish this, I have two dilemmas.
Yeah.
I wanted to ask you.
Yeah.
The first is, what would you choose? What would you choose if you had to choose in between to never eat out again or to never work out again?
Fuck. I'd go for never eat out again. For sure, really, because like
You really like that.
I really like it, but I like exercise more. And these days I'm cooking more because I eat more. When you exercise, you eat more. Just naturally, you're just hungrier. And of course, then you have to feed yourself more often during the day. So I eat a lot more at the house. I have to say, So it wouldn't have been as difficult as it was before. And I just love exercise. It's probably one of the only things where you just follow orders and you get out of your head. It's beautiful.
Yeah, it is. Okay, good answer. Second one. Faking that you're a pilot in an emergency situation or faking that you're the drummer for Paul McCartney's band? Say, playing live in Werther.
Choose one of those?
Yeah.
Faking it.
I mean, they
would you rather be
imagine you woke up from a dreamy state and you're on stage with Paul McCartney as the drummer and you know, like, I'm not a drummer, or being the pilot in an emergency situation of a plane?
I would rather go for being the pilot in an emergency situation of a plane any day of the week. I can really tell you why.
Okay.
Chances are, but wait a minute. One special. I mean, I have to ask. Like, so you would wake up and be the drummer without knowing how to drum, and you would wake up and be the pilot without knowing how to pilot.
Yeah. Maybe you can drum a little, like you probably can.
No, I can't. That's why I be the fucking pilot. Most of my dreams have to do with really being on stage without pants, no teeth. The cable is really far away and you can't grab it. And you're playing a song that has no lyrics. You can't, that kind of shit.
Mm-hmm.
And I really don't like Paul McCartney. Like,
really?
It's not that I don't like him. That's unfair. Like, I'm a John Lennon.
But it's not so much the artist. I mean, it's the really big concert, and you're the drummer, but you can't drum.
I would go for the pilot because chances are the guy next to you might be able to tell you what to do, help you out a bit. But if you're drumming in the back, and you are the fucking backbone of the city. No, I think the pilot.
And maybe our video game experience would get us somewhere, no?
Some flight simulator? Did you play that? Did you? Did you play that?
Yes, a lot.
Did you go to school and leave the flight going? Like, because we're so good that you, because it's like a transatlantic flight, so you have 8 hours.
No, but I heard Dave from Goose does that. He really flies from, let's say, Brussels to Newark or something like that, real time.
So he could probably land a fucking plane.
Yeah. I think this is only part one. I think we have to do this again.
That's good, man. I really I have to say, for a moment I was kind of like, is it gonna be weird? But it's actually not weird at all.
No.
I think we've had conversations that are more weird than this one, or like this was very, very enjoyable because it was just like, yeah, effortless.
I liked it too. It's
Oh, you froze.
Oh yeah. And now you freeze. What a timing. Merci voor te luisteren. Als je het goed vond, kunt je abonneren. Moet je nog vragen of opmerkingen nemen, laat het rustig wel weten in de comments hier beneden. Yo.